In the mystical realm of Orisha, magic once flowed freely through the veins of the chosen, the Maji, marked by their white hair and divine connections. Now, Zili Aribola finds herself imprisoned in a hanging cage aboard a mysterious ship, stripped of her white mane and magical tattoos. Nearly a moon has passed since she and other Maji were abducted by captors they call the Skulls, foreign invaders who inject their prisoners with Majasite to suppress their magic. When she encounters Inan, her former enemy and once lover whom she thought dead, she learns a terrifying truth. These captors are from the tribes of Balderic, hunting specifically for a girl with the blood of the sun. The world Tomi Adeyemi crafts isn't just fantasy, it's a revolution in pages. What makes this story so compelling isn't just its West African mythology or heart-pounding adventure, but how it mirrors our own world struggles with power and oppression. When we see Zili fighting against forces that want to harvest her very essence, aren't we witnessing the same exploitation that marginalized communities have faced throughout history? King Baldir, a young ruler with rectangular runes carved into his fair skin, reveals his sinister purpose when he meets Zili. "Your blood carries the power of the gods." Using an ancient blood metal medallion with a triple arrowhead symbol, he forces it into Zili's chest, where it melts around her bones. This medallion becomes both blessing and curse. It allows her to understand the Skull's language, connects her to Baldir's memories, and eventually grants her the power to restore other Maji's magic with a single touch. Meanwhile, Zili's brother Tsain discovers his own transformation when blood from his wounded arm leaks into a crimson axe. The weapon unleashes his buried rage, granting him tremendous power, but threatening his humanity. Isn't this the perfect metaphor for how power corrupts? The medallion embedded in Zili's chest is literally described as alive, feeding on her soul, spreading roots through her body to prepare her for the harvest. How often do we see systems of oppression weaponizing the very strengths of the marginalized against them, turning power into a form of chains? What makes the Skull's invasion possible is Orisha's internal strife. The Maji Aika control Lagos, while Queen Nahanda's forces fight from outside the walls. Each side blame the other for the mysterious disappearances of Maji, creating blind spots the Skulls expertly exploited. Only when Inan uses his magic to create a vivid hallucination showing everyone the devastating power of the Skulls, the warring factions unite against the common enemy. This division extends beyond politics to the very magic system itself. The 10 Maji clans each have unique powers, titles, and patron deities. Iku controls spirits and animations. Emi read thoughts and create illusions. Omi command water, Iwasan heal wounds, and Afafe control winds. Separately, they're vulnerable. Together, they're formidable. Isn't this precisely how social movements succeed? Not through isolated action, but through coalition building across differences. The survivors' journey leads them to New Gaia, an astonishing floating civilization built on massive webs of vines in a mountain lake. Unlike the Skull's brutal efficiency or Orisha's rigid hierarchies, New Gaia represents harmony with nature rather than domination over it. Their vine weavers don't force plants to bend to their will, but work with living vines to create their city. When we encounter Mae, the mysterious girl from Zeli's vision, with diamonds glittering in her angular eyes and a jeweled scarf wrapped around her night-black hair, we see another potential target of Baldur's hunger for power. She represents a different relationship with magic entirely, one based on stewardship rather than exploitation. Haven't we seen this contrast in our own world? Between economies built on extraction versus sustainability? Between power structures based on domination versus cooperation? New Gaia isn't just a fantasy setting, it's a vision of what might be possible if we reimagined our relationship with power. As Baldir's forces prepare a ritual under the blood moon to drain Zili and Mai's power, transforming himself into a god, the story reaches its climactic moment. Zili makes the ultimate sacrifice, driving a whittled bone through her heart to disrupt the ritual. Though wounded, Baldir survives, dividing his massive fleet between Orisha and New Gaia. The cost of liberation is high. Enin carries Zili's lifeless body to Mount Gaia's summit, where he exchanges his breath of life for hers. In a mystical realm between life and death, they share a final moment. With a last kiss and declaration of love, Enin fades away as Zili returns to life, her full Reaper magic restored. Isn't this the hardest truth about fighting oppression? That victory often requires terrible sacrifice? That those who benefit from unjust systems must sometimes give up their privilege or even their lives for true change to occur? Enin's journey from crown prince and oppressor to liberator represents the possibility of redemption, but also its cost. Reborn with her full power, Zili emerges from Mount Gaia's crater with lightning twisting around her glowing form. She calls upon the spirits of fallen Magi to rise from the waters as animations, creating a whirlpool of white as 1,000 bolts of lightning crash down to defeat Baldir. The aftermath reveals an Orisha transformed, not just by physical scars of warfare, but by a profound shift in relationships. Throughout Lagos, former enemies work side by side. Magi of all clans combine their gifts. Nihonda and Grounders clear collapsed buildings. Burners perform ceremonies for the fallen, and healers tend to injured without discrimination. The sight of titans, once symbols of oppression, working alongside those they once hunted, brings tears to Zili's eyes. Children of noble families help Magi elders rebuild homes. Former palace guards share water with diviners, and merchants freely trade with those they once shunned. When Zili lifts Baldir's golden skull mask skyward, the sunlight transforms what was once a symbol of fear into a testament to victory. The cheers represent every faction of their divided society finally united in celebration. What makes this story powerful isn't just its magic system or plot twists, it's the radical notion that hope itself is an act of courage. When Sane rallies captured Magi to break free, when Amari fights alongside Mei despite her fears, when Inan works to unite warring factions, each character shows that hope isn't naive optimism, but revolutionary defiance. The final rebuilding scenes suggest that revolutions aren't just about dismantling oppressive systems, they're about creating more just ones. As warriors weep in recognition of their achievement, their victory marks the beginning of an era where power flows from unity rather than fear, where magic is celebrated instead of suppressed. In our world, where struggles for justice often seem overwhelming, this may be the most powerful magic, the courage to imagine and fight for a better future, even when victory demands terrible sacrifice. Orisha's magic may be fantasy, but the power of resistance, unity, and hope burns as bright as the lightning in Zali's veins.